supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
There are many days of note this week in the world of astronomy. Let's attend to the calendar with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. And Derek, if we start with this coming Wednesday, it's a rather poignant anniversary.
That's true, Dave. 13 years ago, on February 1st, it was a Saturday, I clearly recall, Space Shuttle Columbia broke up on reentry. It was certainly devastating to the Space Shuttle program. Seven lives were lost, and it was later understood that a piece of foam falling off of the external fuel tank struck the leading edge of one of the wings of the spacecraft and created a hole, actually opened a hole. And from launch through the entire mission, that was not a problem. But during reentry, coming back through the Earth's atmosphere, that hole allowed superheated gases to burn through the wing structure, and the wing structure began to fall apart, and then the rest of the spacecraft itself disintegrated.
Was there an awareness, though, in real time that that hole had been created during the flight, or not until reentry was it known to those on board?
The degree of damage was unknown. Actually, at the time, the degree of damage was unknown. There was some understanding that a chunk of foam had struck the leading edge of the wing, but that was not a highly unusual event. Pieces of foam had fallen off and struck the airframe before, but without anywhere near as much damage as was shown on the inspection of the spacecraft after it had landed. So it was not expected that this level of damage could take place.
And certainly in the short run, it dramatically changed the scheduling of manned flights.
Yes, we didn't get back to space shuttle missions for over 2 years, but in that ensuing 2.5 years, a number of measures were put in place to try to mitigate the result of another incident like that.
On a much lighter note, Thursday is Groundhog Day, but what does that have to do with astronomy?
Well, Groundhog Day is one of those very special days of the year that we talk about frequently. It's a cross-quarter day. We're halfway along the path from the first day of winter to the first day of spring. One of the first ways in which that change is seen, or our position along that path is noticed, is that we have 15 more minutes of daylight this week than we had last week. Day length is now up to 10 hours, 16 minutes, which is pretty good, and we're gaining about 15 minutes a week. And, you know, we'll, of course, we first see it on the evening side of the day because sunsets come later, faster than the sunrises come earlier.
Time to put away the snow shovel?
I would like to think so.
Let's also note that the discoverer of Pluto was born 110 years ago Saturday.
Yes, that was Clyde Tombaugh, born in 1906. Tombaugh really does hold a special place in the panoply of astronomical discoverers, researchers, because of his dogged determination to identify this extraordinarily tiny and dim object way at the farthest reaches of our solar system.
And he was a young man when he did so.
He was a young man when he did so. He was actually a Kansas farm boy who had the idea that he wanted to become an astronomical observer. So he made his way to Lowell Observatories, where he begged the director to give him an opportunity to begin doing observations and do observational astronomical work.
It wasn't his intent to discover new planets, was it?
No. In fact, it wasn't even the task he went there for. As it turns out, others before him had tried to locate Pluto. There was some idea and understanding that there was an object out between that there was an object out beyond Uranus and Neptune, but no one was able to find it. What Tombaugh did was, and we should certainly clear up the idea that he sat at a telescope with his eye on the eyepiece for months at a time, what he actually did was he photographed the night sky in the regions where Pluto was suspected to be, and he did comparative photographs of one part of the sky to another part of the sky from one night to the next night. And he did this over and over and over again, literally thousands of times. And what he was looking for was the telltale movement of one object in the field of the photograph against the background of the other objects. And finally came up with that image. And in several opportunities I had to talk to him about his discovery, he firmly believed that if he hadn't found it, no one else would have found it. And so our hats are off to him for making this fabulous discovery. But we now know that Pluto represents itself or shows itself to be extraordinarily different from anything we ever expected it to look like.
That's thanks to the work of the New Horizons craft, which flew by a couple of years back.
Yeah, it was in 2015 that this spacecraft arrived at its close approach, flying at an incredibly rate of speed as it did the flyby. But it brought us images that really showed that Pluto is an amazingly diverse place in terms of its surface texture. It's about 1,500 miles in diameter. Earth is 8,000 miles in diameter, just about. But the surface of Pluto goes from smooth to rocky to mountainous to cratered. And we've also discovered that it actually has a rocky core with a mantle that's comprised of water ice, and then that's all covered by a thin layer of nitrogen ice. Certainly not what we expected for this object to be like. So that also allows it to have really, really interesting dynamics that we would never have expected again for an object at that distance from the sun, including having an atmosphere that's generated in some degree, to some degree, by radiation from the sun.
Derek, we have a moment left for us remaining rank amateurs. What's available to be seen in the night sky this week?
Really cool stuff this week. First of all, we can begin tonight. We can see Venus and Mars in the southwest sky. The moon will be just below Venus. And over the next several days, particularly tomorrow and Wednesday, the moon will step its way past Venus and past Mars. So this gives you an opportunity, particularly tomorrow night, to be able to identify where Mars is. It will be just to the right of the moon. In addition to this, we have an added guest. International Space Station is visible in the evening sky over in the west tomorrow night, beginning at 6:34 in the evening in the southwest, and it will pass to the northwest and to the north over the next 8 minutes or so. It'll be 33 degrees above the horizon in the west, but you'll have a better chance on Wednesday night when at 5:45 p.m., Space Station comes up just to the right of those planets and passes what will look like overhead with a maximum elevation of 59 degrees. It'll look like a bright white object moving with good speed, and as I always say, as strange as it may seem, it will appear to have no sound. Of course, no one can hear you scream in space, so there's no wonder you can't hear Space Station either.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Fitz, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight.